Welcome to The Buzz, the official podcast of the Jazz Journalist Association. I'm your host, Rick Mitchell, and today I am here with esteemed colleagues Jeffrey Himes and Tom Hull. Jeffrey Himes has written about jazz and other genres of music on a regular basis for the Washington Post since 1977, and has also written for Jazz Times, Paste, Rolling Stone, New York Times, Smithsonian Magazine, National Public Radio, and others. His book on Bruce Springsteen, Born in the USA, was published by Continuum Books in 2005, and he's currently working on a major book for the Country Music Hall of Fame. He has been honored for music feature writing by the Deems Taylor ASCAP Awards four times. Tom Hull is a retired software engineer who did some freelance reviewing for the Village Voice in the 1970s and returned in 2005 to 2010 to write the Voice's Jazz Consumer Guide column. He continues to blog with weekly reviews of 30-plus albums at tomhull.com and maintains a ratings database that is closing in on 40,000 albums. He also manages the Francis Davis Jazz Bowl, which Davis created in 2006. Welcome to The Buzz, guys.
Glad to be here.
Yeah.
Tom, why don't you give us a little history of the Francis Davis Jazz Bowl and your relationship to it?
Well, Francis Davis started it in 2006 as a sort of a supplement to one of these, you know, one of the usual year-end lists that are done by everybody when he was writing at the Village Voice. So what he did is he invited about 30 of his friends to submit top 10 lists, and he tabulated them all and initiated this critics poll, similar to, but much smaller than the Passage Job polls that the Voice had been running since the 1970s. Several years later, the poll sort of had a big bang and went over 100 critics. Been basically between 100 and 150 ever since then. Both Francis and I stopped writing for The Voice around 2010 due to some shakeups in the editing structure there. Francis arranged for the poll to be sponsored by first Rhapsody for a couple of years and then NPR for a long time. In the last 2 years, it's been published by Arts Fuse in Boston. I voted in the original one because I was writing for The Voice at that time, and we had an invite, and I was writing, I would do a year-end list as well. After a couple of years, when the number of ballots started to explode, got up around 100, the editor of The Voice asked me if I'd be willing to publish the ballots on a server that I have, and I did. And so I've been sort of second banana on the poll ever since, helping out with the presentation, especially of the ballots. And over the last couple of years, especially since Francis has had some health issues, I've taken a bigger and more expansive role in that, basically running it this last year. Originally, it was, of course, called the Village Voice Jazz Critics Poll, and then, you know, it went on NPR Village, NPR Critics Jazz Poll. And this last year, I decided to honor Davis and just start calling it what people were already telling me it was, the Francis Davis Jazz Bowl.
Thanks, Tom. Jeff, you have written for virtually every magazine in the world, or at least in the United States. How many of these jazz bowls do you traditionally vote in?
Yeah, I usually, you know, I think I voted in the first poll for Francis, if not very early on. So I've always voted in that one. I've always voted in the Downbeat poll since I started writing for them. I've voted in the Jazz Times poll, and I vote for the JJA poll every year too.
JJA Jazz Awards, which are just getting underway right now. And you also vote in other polls that aren't specifically jazz, including for a while you were the editor of the Nashville Scene Country Music Critics poll. Briefly, what do you think explains the enduring popularity of these polls? I think Downbeat's poll goes back to Downbeat goes back to the 1930s. I'm not sure the poll goes back quite that far, but it goes back a long way. Also, the Metronome poll, Playboy magazine had a readers poll for many years. Why do we do this? Why do all of us dutifully sit down at the beginning of the next year and chart down our top albums of the previous year?
Well, let me talk about this two ways. You know, as a reader, I enjoy them because you know, when you read a review, you're getting one person's opinion about a record or a movie or whatever. And that's great to have one person think. But when you read a poll, you're getting a consensus view of people who were professionally engaged in the field, and the sort of outlier opinions gets smoothed out, and you get a sense of where the critical overall feeling is about a year and who's really good and not. And as a voter, I really enjoy the exercise of doing 10 best lists and polls, which are sort of a natural outgrowth of that, because it sort of forces you to make distinctions, finer distinctions than you might make in any individual record review or profile or whatever you're writing. You know, it's one thing to say an album is good, but when you have to say, well, how good is it compared to all the other albums that are released contemporaneously, it makes you think harder about what good means and the degrees of goodness. I find that a useful exercise, especially when the end of the year comes and you can sort of go back and look at things and sort of figure out, well, you know, how strong were my feelings really about all these records?
Tom, got anything to add?
I pretty much feel the same thing, but I guess most because of my social science background or whatever, it's a lot of data for me. One thing I try to do is I try to listen to a very wide range of material. And, you know, usually about 25-30% of the records that come in and get votes in our poll are things that I still hadn't heard of before. And I'm pretty knowledgeable about this stuff. So it's a great way of self-checking.
I mean, Tom, do you find yourself at the end of a year trying to track down records you might have missed that you feel like you should have listened to, but you never got around to?
Oh, yeah. Well, I've tried to quantify this thing. I've done things like trying to build a list of every jazz record that I, you know, that's appeared in reference to in print. And there's like 2,000-3,000 of these every year, maybe more than that. And I keep comprehensive lists of everything I've listened to, at least all the way through, no matter if that's the only time. And, you know, I come up with maybe 600 jazz records, maybe 1,200, 1,300 records overall, because I listen to jazz a year. And that's, you know, we're scratching the surface. Even I'm just scratching the surface here in terms of what's available. So you do have it. The other thing you get out of aggregating all these top 10 lists is you get both a wide range of views and experiences, but you're also forcing all the critics to basically work in the same framework. So they all have to boil things down to a top 10, and that gives you a degree of uniformity that validates the data in ways that just trying to go through and follow the regular print reviews and stuff like that don't do.
I think it's worth noting that part of what's happened is that with the technology changing for the last 25, 30 years, you know, it's now possible for everybody to make a record. And as a result, sometimes it seems that everybody has. And this thing that Tom is referring to, like 3,000 albums a year coming out, I don't think that was true 30 years ago. You know, and that changes the ability of, you know, a critic or anybody who really cares about the music to hear everything.
Bradford Marcellus told me in an interview a few years ago that he felt that there was a wide disparity between albums and artists that did well in critics' polls. He was specifically referencing the Francis Davis poll at the time and what he called the jazz audience really listens to, and also perhaps jazz musicians really listen to. And by that, I don't think he meant smooth jazz. I think he meant his audience, like the modern mainstream straight ahead jazz audience. Do you think that the polls sometimes reflect the tendency that we have as critics to want to be out in front of the crowd, looking for the next new thing all the time?
I think that one of the value of polls is that they provide a counter balance to the Billboard charts. You know, we already have the Billboard charts to give us data about what's popular. And if we believe that popularity and quality are not identical, then you need another way to represent quality versus quantity. And I think that polls are one way of doing that.
A few years ago, Cecile McLaurin-Salvant, when debut album came out, she won the Downbeat Critics poll, did well in several categories, and it seemed to kind of give her career a boost. Are there ways in which these polls help artists? And conversely, are the artists that consistently draw crowds when they're out on the road but get overlooked year after year in the polls, does it hurt them at all?
I think that the polls more or less, you know, reflect the consensus, more critical consensus. I mean, you can look at the difference between the Oscars and the box office on movies, and you'll find that people who vote for Oscars are looking for certain qualities that are not necessarily reflected in raw sales. I think the same thing happens in jazz polls and everything else. We're looking for something that probably because we're we'd like to think better a formed group. We're looking for things that have certain qualities that is not just ordinary jazz.
What distinguishes the polls from each other? You know, in the Jazz Journalists Association, we kind of have two stages. We have an initial round of nominations, and then that leads to a final round of nominations, I guess similar in that sense to the Grammys or the Oscars. And also, we vote for individual artists on their instruments, similar to the Downbeat poll, and categories that are related to journalism and photography and writing, as opposed to simply playing music. But what about, say, what distinguishes between Downbeat and the Francis Davis poll and historically the Jazz Times polls? Can you predict it? Like, this one's more avant-garde, this one's more mainstream, anything like that?
Well, I think we have more voters who are specifically interested in free or avant-garde jazz than you do, you know, especially in Jazz Times or in Downbeat. But on the other hand, for instance, about half of the people who vote in the Jazz Times poll also vote in our poll, yet it produces significantly different results. Again, probably we typically have like 25, 30 writers who actually write for Downbeat, so are involved in the Downbeat poll. But I also, I've tried to seek out, you know, people with wider ranges of taste. And for instance, I look at Free Jazz Collective and their writers. I look at All About Jazz. We take a lot of people who vote for the New York City Jazz Record. And we also have a significant number of broadcasters, broadcast journalists and the Francis Davis poll. They skew a little bit differently than the other writers. But the net result is that even though we have more voters and they cover a wider range of stuff, including much more avant-garde stuff, still the consensus is very similar to what you find in critics' polls elsewhere. I don't know about JJA, but over the last 15 years, you know, most of the records that have won the Downbeat poll have won Francis Davis poll.
Yeah, I think that the differences among the polls are not, there's some, you know, as Tom says, there might be more free jazz voters in his voting population, but the real stark differences between the Downbeat critics poll and the readers poll, I think that's more instructive than the different critics polls.
Agreed. Back in the 1950s, the Downbeat readers poll and the Playboy readers poll seemed to be weighted toward leading white jazz artists. Dave Brubeck was a perennial winner, Stan Kenton. Has that pretty much evolved away from that to where you can't really pin the fact that the majority of the voters are certainly white in the critics polls, but there does not appear to be an obvious favoritism toward white artists anymore?
Well, I think that in the 50s, you know, those reader polls were reflecting record sales to a large extent. You know, Brubeck and Kenton, whatever you think about them, were selling a lot of records. And so it's not surprising that record buyers, who would be natural voters in those polls, would show the same preference in the poll that they do in their purchasing.
Tom, any thoughts?
Yeah, well, obviously, some of us remembered the 1950s, and it was a different culture then. Jazz, basically, a lot of jazz went underground kind of in the 1970s, aside from the fusion groups, Miles Davis and that sort of thing. And then it sort of reemerged in the 1990s in this sort of consensus of this revival of mainstream bop-based stuff, such as the Branford Marsalis stuff that you were talking about. And that sort of became the real mainstream. And that particular style of music is, there's some white musicians who were part of that, but there's a lot of Black musicians who are at the center of that. And they, for instance, really dominate the downbeat readers' polls now. You get, Christian McBride, you get, the Marsalises and people like that who are they're not avant-garde. They're not out on the cutting edge. They're sort of the mainstream. And I don't think you can really slice that racially and draw anything meaningful from it.
I think that in my voting, I try not to vote by genre, but by what I find to be the highest quality. And that it can be Branford, or it can be Emmanuel Wilkins, or it can be Ornette or whatever. That it's not free jazz or mainstream for me, but it's like, what moves.
When I was writing for a daily paper, which I did for many years, I would keep a kind of a running tally throughout the year of contenders for my top 10. Sometimes I would do two separate top 10s, one for jazz, one for everything else other than classical music. And then sometimes I would combine the two. But I did keep a running tally. I don't do that anymore, at least not like I used to. And I particularly don't do that in the JJA Jazz Awards, where you're voting for, individual instrumental categories. And I find that sometimes I forget, like particularly if somebody delivered a terrific performance on somebody else's album, they're a sideman on somebody else's album, but they're playing great and they deserve to be nominated. And then because they're not on the album cover particularly, I forget. Do you guys keep a running tally as you go through the year of people that you think you might want to nominate or vote for?
I do for album titles. I don't for musicians.
Yeah.
I keep a very detailed album list. I've been voting in the downbeat poll for, 10 years or so now. I really dislike voting for individual musicians and stuff like that, because it's just too hard to weigh all of that stuff out. And it's also more personal than albums. But I have like crib sheets on my website where, I keep track of who I voted for in past years. And I often wind up voting for the same people just because it takes so much time to do that ballot, and it's so frustrating.
Do you keep a database of your previous ballots going back over the decades?
No.
Jeff, do you?
I used to. I don't think I haven't done that in a while. I try to keep copies of the polls, so I know what's won the last couple of years.
I could probably look up all the things. I put them into, a notebook or something like that, but I don't, it's not structured as a database where I can, readily access the information.
Jeff, are you planning on voting in the JJA Awards?
Yeah, I always do.
Yeah, so do you have any predictions? Last year, Kenny Garrett won Album of the Year, which I was pleasantly surprised by, that because that is kind of a more mainstream choice than, let's just say, Mary Halverson. But I have no predictions at all for this year. I have no idea.
What's the time period for this year that they're covering?
Well, pretty much late 2021 to late 2022.
Yeah, that's always problematic because all my album lists are categorized by year.
Yeah. Well, it's basically that, give or take a couple of weeks.
I mean, Emmanuel Wilkins was my favorite album last year. I can't remember when it was released. See, that's the thing, I have to go back.
It was 2022. Tom, any predictions based on the Francis Davis results?
No, I'm not involved in a JJA thing, so I really am completely unfamiliar with it. I will say that I've always thought that Downbeat trying to skew their polls by 3 months or so just to get it up to the deadline is counterproductive, and that it would actually be nice to have a poll of 2022 records taking place in April instead of in December, when you don't, you know, when you have at least that would give you a chance to catch up. And I think the Reader's poll is even more confusing in that way.
So as well as being voters, you've also both been poll curators and editors, where you're, I'm assuming, opening the ballots and also writing up the results, you know, putting it in, making sense of why the voters voted the way that they voted. When you're opening the ballots, do you find yourself rooting for underdogs or your personal favorites?
Well, you know, it's like watching a baseball game. You can like root for one team, but your rooting is not going to have any effect on the result of the baseball game.
Yeah, I very rarely find myself, you know, rooting for anybody. Sometimes I would like to see some things that I regard as unworthy not do as well as they do, but you're basically trying to find out what other people are thinking. So it's not.
I mean, that's the beauty of it, is the numbers are the numbers.
Yeah.
Jeff, what if your rooting does have a factor on who wins the baseball game? For example, the Baltimore Orioles.
Oh, if only it were true, Rick. True. Howard Mandel asked me to be on the awards committee for 1 year. And I always felt like there could be fewer categories rather than more categories. And I got outvoted on the committee. And I was wondering how the two of you think. Is there too many categories in some of these polls, or is it better to have every single instrument mentioned?
I think that's a big problem with Downbeat. And that's, you know, the first couple of years when I got the Downbeat poll, and there's about 30 categories in that, including all of the, you know, rising stars. I mean, it took me like 24 hours to fill out that ballot first time through. Since then, I've taken it progressively less seriously, so I get down to around 4 hours or something like that. But when you go instrument by instrument, you know, it's, you have like literally hundreds of piano players and bassists and drummers and saxophonists that you'd like to give some recognition to. And, you know, you haven't even heard of half the names in the flute category. And the ones that you have heard are actually saxophonists. So,
on the other hand, unlike most polls, at least Downbeat gives you a T-shirt and a subscription.
Yeah, that's what we live for these days.
That's right.
Hey, well, we will look forward to seeing what the JJA Awards come up with this year. We're just entering the final round of voting, and the winners will be announced in mid-May. I want to thank Jeffrey Himes and Tom Hull for joining us on this episode of The Buzz, the official podcast of the Jazz Journalist Association. I'm your host, Rick Mitchell, and we'll be back in a couple of weeks. Thanks for listening.
I'm Susan Brink for the Jazz Journalist Association. Thank you for listening to The Buzz, a podcast produced by the JJA. We release new episodes regularly on all the major platforms. To learn more about us, go to jjanews.org. This episode was edited by Wiz Petta. The John Michaels composition, Big Vic, is our theme music. Toodaloo!